Music from Me and Mountains right there. That's Honesty and Rock and Roll. You can find that on their new album, 3. Before that, we heard The Magnetic Fields with a track from Love at the Bottom of the Sea. We had The Tallest Man on Earth and some Father John Misty before that from the Fear Fun album. This is Kaleidoscope on 91.3 WYSO, where support comes from listeners like you and the Downtown Dayton Revival Music Festival. Coming to Dayton this Saturday and Sunday, starring Train and John Legend, 3 stages and over 30 bands, including Guided by Voices, Guster, The Ohio Players, Robert Randolph and the Family Band, and many more. Full lineup and tickets are at downtownrevival.org. More music on the way, but first, we are going to chat with Mika Pauly, or rather, I already chatted with her earlier today, but you're going to hear some of that chat. She is going to be playing at Ghost Light Coffee next Wednesday, September 12th. That is going to start at 8 p.m. BJ Asar will be opening up, our good friend. And I caught up with Mika earlier today, and we had a chat about her new album. It is called The Science of Making Choices. We're going to hear a track from that one here in just a moment. But first, here's my chat with Mika Pauly. I've been listening to some tracks from your new album, Science of Making Choices, and I understand that that was a fan-funded album. Tell me about the decision to go that route and how that went for you.
The last CD I had released in 2007, Elijah Drop Your Gun, I decided to fan-fund that album simply because I didn't have the funds or backing or anything like that. And so I did that all, you know, just via PayPal and Excel and stuff like that. But then this time around, I was approached by company Pledge Music, who sort of streamlined the process and made it a lot more interesting for fans. So it wasn't just I was collecting their money, but I was also including them in the process of making the album so that they had the full experience.
And what was that like? Did you get a lot of feedback that people were really into being included in that process rather than just sort of getting the end result of it?
I think so. You know, they had the means for fans to comment every time I posted something online. And then, you know, they got a lot of cool things out of it as well afterwards. It wasn't just a finished project. Like, you're catching me in the middle of writing out handwritten lyric books to the song. Not to the song, but to the album. And so a few people will get that in addition to the album. And there were other things I offered too, like a house concert or a songbook, you know, with guitar chords, poster, et cetera, et cetera.
And as an artist, what was that like to sort of have all of these folks as kind of flies on the wall for your album making process? Did that at all influence the way you tackled this album?
I think it just kept me excited the whole time. You know, instead of being isolated, you know, just me and the producer and the musicians, it was nice to sort of have that energy coming from the outside, people getting psyched about having the album released. And, you know, because it can be stressful putting an album together. And it was just, it kept me positive, I guess, throughout the whole process.
I listened to some album tracks, and then I also was checking out some videos of you performing live. This album really captures the energy, that raw energy that you have in your live performance as well. Was that, or has that been difficult for you to capture in the studio, or can you sort of find that same vibe that you would have in an intimate live performance in the studio if there happens to be nobody watching?
First, just thank you for what you said at the beginning, because as it happens, it's nearly impossible. This is the first album that I've been able to do that. On my previous albums, there's always something missing, and people would always, they'd buy the album and say, but they preferred the live show better. And so when I went in with this producer, I explained that had been a problem in the past. And in this case, his solution was to track all my vocals in as live a setting as possible. So I'm sure you've heard of this. Maybe people haven't heard of this before, but when you comp vocals, it means you sing you sing the line over and over and over again, and then you take the best takes and you sort of Frankenstein an entire vocal take out of it. And in this case, we didn't do that. Like, if I outright, messed up, we might have fixed it. But for the most part, like all the quirks and, you know, places where my voice might have been too raspy or cracked, you know, we made sure to keep all that in there. There's no auto-tune, anything like that. And so I think what people react to is, you know, the imperfections of my live show. You know, that's how you transfer the emotion. It's not, they're not there just to see me, like, perfectly deliver lines. And so I sang the tracks. I did the scratch tracks right there with the drummer in the studio, and we just sort of just barreled through all the songs as opposed to overthinking it. And I think that's how we captured it.
Let's talk a little bit about your songwriting process. I know that you've got a song that's a contender in the International Songwriting Contest, and you've been a part of a couple other songwriters' competitions. The question I always like to ask, as a writer myself, what comes first, lyrics or music?
You know, in my case, I'm always hit by lines first, you know, and I will build entire songs around a certain line. And so in this case, it would be, I guess, both together. You know, like Wreck, the first line I came up with, I sang it as it was, you know, I want to wreck your home. Mark Mann, it was the same thing. I was just sort of chanting that to myself one night while I'm driving and decided to record it. And then after that, it's just all, you know, it's basically work after that. And it might be the words. I might, like, try to flesh out the idea first, see what it actually means, or I might just try to figure out musically where it's going. But really, it always just starts with one line.
And are you one of those artists that is writing all the time? I mean, I know that some artists, they finish one album and they've already got, you know, two more albums worth of material ready to go. Or do you kind of work on things in spurts or as they come?
Yeah, I am horribly unprolific. I wish I could write more. But it comes in spurts and very random, widely spaced spurts. You know, like all my songs on my albums are autobiographical, but I can never write while things are happening. So it's just this sort of cycle of having, like, a really crappy time. I understand I'm on the radio. I almost use a more choice word than that. So I'll have, like, a really crappy time for a year, and then I'll, you know, that'll sink into my brain. And then the year or two after that is sort of writing about that experience. But while I was going through it, I'm dry.
So you kind of have to have that that separation there to be able to translate it into a song.
Yeah, otherwise it's just me whining, you know. I need to have that mental clarity to be able to, like, translate it into, you know, poetry or art, as opposed to just being like, I'm so sad that this happened. You know, that's not interesting at all.
Well, I know you're going to be in Dayton on September 12th playing at Ghostlight Coffee, which is a really intimate venue. What's that like to play those smaller, intimate spaces and to be right there with your audience in really close quarters? As a performer and as an artist, is that at all intimidating, or is it almost, you know, more fun to be able to feed directly off that energy you're getting from the audience?
You know, initially, years ago, when I started supplementing my tours with house concerts, initially it was intimidating, you know, because you get to look at everybody's face as you're singing. There's something about being on stage, having the lights in your eyes, and you can imagine everybody's just, like, wrapped, and, you know, they're quiet and all that. But when you're in a house concert, you can see if somebody's spacing out, and, you know, and it does throw you. But now I love it. It's the knack to it is that you treat it like a party. You don't treat it like a show, you know. You get there, and so when I get there, I'll interact with everybody first, you know, meet them so I know who I'm singing to, you know, so when the banner in between can be, you know, more inside jokes, you know, so I can break down that separation between the stage and the audience. And so I don't know what I like better, whether I like being on a big stage better or being in an intimate space. I think I actually need both, you know, to keep the other fresh.
And from there, I see that you're continuing on, you know, with dates from California to New York City. Do you prefer to stay on the road touring pretty consistently?
it's been my life for the past 10 years, so I think it's just what I know. Currently is beneficial because I haven't had an apartment since January, so I've got to kind of keep moving. I don't want to, like, squat in a friend's apartment, you know? Right now I'm squatting, I guess, in Philly, and when I get to Ohio, I'll sort of take advantage of hospitality there. So, you know, eventually I will want a home. I want to stay there for a while, but I think right now this is just for the life that's been given me.
So looking ahead to the rest of the fall and to the new year, you're going to be staying on the road. Any other big plans in store?
No, right now I think it's just touring behind the record and making sure everybody can get it.
And that record is called The Science of Making Choices. It's by Mika Pauly. You can see her on September 12th, that's next Wednesday, at Ghostlight Coffee. BJSR is going to be opening that show up. We'll have some links to information on our Facebook page. We're at facebook.com/kaleidoscope radio. Right now, here's a track from Mika Pauly's new album. This one's called Wreck.